fish and Frank in the chair. You lucky, lucky, don't you?
Uh-huh.
All right, well, you clicked the button, so hey, it ain't my fault. Yeah, you had to work to get here. So, anyway, I have Captain Carl in guest seat here. I'm not sure what this program is going to be about. Carl walked in. I said, hey, you want to do radio fishing? He says, sure. So, Carl, what are we talking about?
It's windy out there, I can tell you that.
You know, I actually took some bait home, had that, grabbed an extra pole in case my line was too old. All that stuff, it's all still sitting under the house.
I tried to call you yesterday because Jeff and them said that you grabbed a fishing pole and some bait, and I was like, is he okay?
Yeah.
So I tried to call yesterday.
I'm having a my one of those aneurysms where your blood vessels in your brain explode and I'm actually going out in the water.
Hey, it's a good thing, though.
But, I mean, I live on the river.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if my boat, if I would have been taking my boat out, I wouldn't worry about it at all.
No.
But I had the little boat that I was going to put in. Anyway, and the little boat's on the ramp. My boat's still sitting on the trailer, so. You know, and I was trying to get one of these drive-on, drive-off floating dock things. And I'm talking to some guy out of Sarasota. And this clown ball, he's going, okay, it's going to be this much. And you need two sections, it's going to be this much, and all this. And, oh, yeah, this is going to be great. And first of all, I said, is this the one I was looking at when I, you know. And he says, yeah. And then I get down to the warehouse, I drive down to Cape Coral. And the guy in Cape Coral is amazing, nice guy. I mean, he has the warehouse down there. I forget the name of it all, but nothing to do with him. But this other guy's telling me all this stuff's going to work. It wouldn't even come close.
Wow.
I have a 24-foot flats boat, plus the motor, all that, you know, so it's 30 feet. He wanted me to put it on a 16-foot dock, and it has two things that hold it up. He said, well, just use the short pipes. I'm like, yeah. So luckily, on my saltwater canal, tides, we don't have tides, and the wind doesn't affect the water ever either. And he's like, well, good, so you can use the short poles. I'm like, man, I talked a guy out of a $300 setup today because he has one at home. He has a bass fishing bait cast rod and reel. He says, I said, well, do you use it anymore? No, I don't use them since I came to Florida. I said, why don't you use that and see if you like it first?
Yep.
Because he's looking at, you know, $150 reel, $125 rod with line and everything else. You're talking like $300. I said, why don't you try what you got before you buy this?
Exactly.
I mean, because when I got down there, it was literally $3,500, $4,000 more what I would have had to pay than what he was telling me. And if he would have just been honest with me and said, man, I messed up. You know, I really thought this would do it, but, you know, it's not going to work on your boat. I would have probably just said, okay, I'll take it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, everybody makes a mistake. But trying to con me into buying something.
No.
How well do you think that worked?
Not very well.
Yeah. I mean, he's lucky he's still got his front teeth.
Wow.
Yes, I am that type of person. You know, I just don't like being messed with. I don't mess with other people.
Nope.
They can interpret whatever they want, but I'm pretty straight up. I give a one-year warranty. If you come in 3 years later and I won't warranty it, gee, guess what? I offered you a one-year warranty.
Exactly.
If I can do it longer, I will. But sometimes, it's like if you go and pray. Sometimes the answer is no.
Yeah.
You know, you can pray all you want, but it doesn't always mean you're getting that.
No.
I don't even claim to be anywhere close to having that type of people person. I'm not in that league even a little bit. So I figure I do pretty good honoring what I get. So anyway, how has the fishing been over the last couple weeks?
The fishing's been great. You're inshore, you know, it's a little bit easier to do right now because you could get out of the wind and hide. The redfish are doing amazing right now. You know, I've been using a lot of cut bait, a lot of crabs mainly, chunk mullet, a lot of cut pinfish.
Now, I think here's the thing. Everybody's telling me how bad the fishing is. Oh, the fishing's horrible here, the fishing's horrible there, yeah. But, you know, I think the truth of it is, if you fish one way, like if you fish with white bait, and you go to this certain area, and you fish with white bait, you're going to have some really horrible times during the year.
Yes.
And if you go to that same area, part of the year fish with white bait, part of the year fish with shrimp, part of the fish with pinfish, part of it with cut pinfish, part of it with dead fish, dead shrimp, and you're changing your baits all the time, even if you're fishing in the same area, mm-hmm. now your odds are going to increase.
Yes.
But if you fish that, now we've said if you fish one area with one kind of bait, you're not going to have good luck a lot of the year. But if you fish one area with multiple different types of bait, as the weather and the water changes, yep. you'll have better luck. But if you move around and go to new spots with
multiple baits,
but even if you move around with different spots, you only like using one type of bait, which I don't get. You know, like you always want to use shrimp. Well, you're going to do okay, but part of the year you're not going to do very well. And if you only use white bait, you got some really good days and some really lousy days.
Mm-hmm.
But the more spots you hit, the more likely you are to go. But why wouldn't you use multiple spots with multiple types of bait?
I think everybody's just stuck in, like, their normal patterns from year after year after year. And, like, the fish patterns aren't the same.
And then you get a year like last year, which was completely whacked out. The river was at 12 feet at yeah. this point. It was between 10 and 12 feet. And last January, it was at 14 feet. Mm-hmm. This year, it's at less than a foot.
Yep.
So, everything changed.
I'm not even looking at my books from last year and the year before.
In 15, it was kind of one of those spectacular winters. A little bit of rain, a little bit of water flow, a little bit of clean water coming in out. 14 and 15 were two of the best years.
Yes.
There was fish all over the place. Everything was working. The weather was perfect. It was normal kind of weather patterns, tide patterns. And then 16 hit, and the whole world went nuts.
It did.
So, in multiple levels. But, you know, and now you've got a year that's unlike 16. It's very, very dry. The closest I've seen to this would go back 2006, 2007, when we had the droughts.
Yeah.
But the weather, it was cooler then.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get really hot, then really cool. Then we get some nice cool times and really hot and really cool. And we're not getting the cloud cover.
No.
Without the cloud cover, the water heats up big time all day and doesn't have a chance to cool off at night.
Well, fish also see you a lot better. You know, when there's no cloud cover, it's crystal clear out. It makes it tough fishing sometimes.
Did you ever do, like I did one time, we're sitting there, we're fishing these schools of reds that were up on top of the sandbar. It was just a little bit south of the ponds. And the reds are coming up over the bar, and they're scattered all over in the little potholes and stuff. And we're having a great day fishing. I thought, well, if I can just bring them a little closer, I dumped some menhaden oil
yep.
in the live well to let it disperse through the live well and go out. Well, the water gets perfectly slick and calm, and the fish look up, go, oh, my God, there's a boat, and run.
Yep.
They took off. As soon as I put that oil in the water, it was like every fish, they didn't come to it. They ran.
Oh, yeah. They knew something wasn't right. I mean, it's a little expensive, but sometimes I'm out there, and I'll dab a little bit of Pure Cure, you know, in the right. water, and in my live oil and stuff. You know, I put a lot of scent.
You just have to be careful, because if it's oil-based, all of a sudden, but right now it doesn't make any difference because the water is so clear, it's like putting oil on
yes.
it. But when you have those rough, little choppy days, you're real close to the redfish, you pour oil in the water, and all of a sudden they go, oh, my God, there's a boat there. I'm out of here.
Yep. You know?
So,
but, I mean, I just think a lot of people are stuck in, like, what they were doing last year and the year before this time of year, and it's totally different. You know, I'm not fishing the normal same spots that I would in the years past this time of year. You know, our temperatures were different. You know, we have no rain at all. I mean, today was supposed to rain, and what happened to that?
It rained north of us, east, yeah. east of us, south of us. Never really hit here. Like the other night, it rained at my house. We probably had, a quarter inch of rain. Now, out by 3 miles away, they probably had half, three quarters of an inch, and over here in town, it had none.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it hit today. If you were lucky, you got rained on. If you weren't, you didn't. But then the wind was blowing 25, 30 miles
yes.
an hour. So, you know what I got to do? I got to make up a map and put it up there and put the wind arrows on it and where you can get to, where is it safe to be on days
where is
like
sheltered?
That.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea. Because, I mean, that's mainly what I look for when I'm going out on the boat that day. If the wind's coming really hard out of the east, I'm going to go to the east wall, the Punta Gorda side, and fish, or Placita, you know, because those areas are going to be sheltered. I'm going to stay away from, like, the west wall.
Where do you go on a south wind, though? You can only go in the Peace River.
Peace River. I mean, I could get in, like, to the back of Turtle Bay and the back of Bull Bay.
How do you get there?
I ride the back ways.
Yeah, you're going to have to come around from Placita, yes. Because you got to figure they're coming in a boat ramp. You're not, if with a south wind, you're not getting down the west side of the harbor. Nope. Or the east. So
yeah, most of the time I put in like Placita, and I'll run through like the back of Catfish to the back of Whitten. I take all the back ways.
It's pretty rough from the trestle getting over to the flats, though.
It is. I mean, that's in that little stretch, I'll mainly idle till I get to where it's shallow, and then once I'm in shallow water, I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, the mica cutoff's another good place for a south wind.
Yeah, but if you put in an algebeam, it is.
Yep.
If you put in the algebeam ramp, you can swing right up along the Myakka there, mm-hmm. and get up into the cutoff Tippy Canoe Bay.
Port Charlotte Beach would be a rough ride from there.
I wouldn't go from Port Charlotte Beach, because if there's any west to that, on a day like today, you're looking at 4 to 6 footers between Alligator Bay and the Myakka cutoff.
Yes. You know, another good thing to do is, you know, canal fish. We got a lot of fish in our canals on a real bad windy day, too. You know, they're going to push a little deeper, because the deeper they are, the less they're getting beat up by the waves and the wind.
Right. PGI is always a good one for windy days like this. Yeah. That Rim Canal, go back and hit that deep hole.
You know, Colony Point, you know, Bass Inlet, up in Ponce, all those are great areas for snook. You know.
Spring Lake, if you put in, or West Spring Lake, rather. You put in a West Spring Lake, and I go out and drift that area out there by that island, but you wouldn't be able to drift it on a day like today. You'd have to anchor, but you still should be able to catch some fish or come up underneath the bridge, back up in the East Spring Lake. I like that section from the bridge back west over to where it narrows down, where that real deep hole is on that side.
I mean, there was a bunch of black drum in there, and there was a bunch of juvenile tarpon in there.
Yeah. You're laughing at me because, you're like...
I was there last week.
What are you talking about? Why are you talking about these spots?
I was there last week, hiding out of the wind.
It's funny how many very obvious places. You know, when I was chartering, there was only one guy who ever bothered me on the water, because knowing how I, you know, fish patterns and stuff, this guy was born and raised here and loved to fish, and he's like you, he knew every creek, every back ditch, he knew when the fish should be showing up there, and I'd go, okay, well, you know, this is slowing down out here, I know where these fish are going to be, and I'd head up there, and sure as heck he was sitting in those spots. I was God, it's hard to compete with you guys who were born and raised here. You know, I mean, I'm a Yankee transplant, and you can tell because I don't have any drawl. But being a Yankee transplant, I still learn the fish, where to go, what to do, how to do it. You know, I got really intense with it. It used to make me so nuts. I mean, there's a little spot up by 75 that, you know, about a month ago, I would have started hitting. He's the only other one I ever saw up in there. I mean, you had to be here when the old timers to find these little back holes.
Oh, yeah.
And so, but now, are you finding right now, how's the white bait working? For snook, it's great.
For snook, it's amazing.
You can catch all the snook, small snook you want with white bait.
Majority of them are going to be, you know, your medium to small snook on the white bait.
Right.
But other than that, the white bait's not really working for... not too many other fish. A redfish here and there, but everything hasn't turned on to it yet.
You know, I'm not sure what it is, and we're hearing lots of people, but we've had white bait shortages for the last few years, and they're complaining about everything in the world, but really we are to blame as much as anything else with the cast nets. I took a real simple formula. You figure 50 boats a day in Florida going out with a cast net, catching 100 pieces of bait.
Yeah.
I'd say that's a reasonable assumption.
Mm-hmm.
So you take, let's see. I'll do some math here real quick. If I get to anything real quick on this. All right. So we got 50 boats a day times 100 pieces of bait. That equals 5,000. Now times that by 365. That's 1,825,000 pieces of bait, just 50 boats a day would take. So that's a lot. 2 million pieces of bait, let's say, for just even considering a small amount of recreational anglers, and I would actually not be hesitant to say 200 boats a day taking 100 pieces of bait, and it's ungodly numbers. Yeah. It blanked my calculator.
I mean, be honest with you, I mean, I wish they would ban netting for at least a year.
Well, bait lives a year and a half, 2 years. That's its lifespan. The problem is it takes half of that lifespan, 6 months, to get up to spawning size.
Mm-hmm.
And what would actually be nice is at the end of snook season, you know, when we got, March and April snook season. At the end of April, so April, May, June, July, August, and not reopen, allow cast netting again until September.
Yeah.
If we just did that each year, statewide, no cast nets inside of the barrier islands anywhere, nothing inland from, you know, what did I say? We got March and April. So May, June, July, August, even 4 months out of the year. That would allow the bait to grow big enough. It actually needs 6 months, but 4 months would be okay. That would allow the bait to get big enough to spawn once.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could just figure out, you know, like if they move snook season to February and March and didn't give us April, and then we had April, May, June, July, August, 5 months a year with no cast nets.
Yeah.
Because you can sabiki up your tarpon bait.
Oh, yeah. Easily. I mean, I did yesterday.
And the problem is the big schools of baits, once they get 3 miles offshore, get hit by the purse seiners. And the commercial guys where I get a lot of my frozen bait from. So we don't want to cut the commercial guys off, but we don't want to just ban the recreational. There's got to be a little bit more to it. Yeah, take some of it out of the commercial industry too. Make, you know, so if it's in the Gulf, you know,
it's okay.
Let's push that thing out, close it down in state waters,
mm-hmm.
only 9 miles out. Anything out past 9 miles, they can still go out and commercially fish. But for those 5 months, nothing to do with
it. Would help a lot.
Nothing in state waters. Nowhere can you throw a cast net or anything on any type of bait fish.
I mean, I remember when I was younger, we used to be able to go out and walk across the harbor on bait. From the east wall all the way to the west wall, you could walk on bait.
Well, now you got commercials, guys getting it, recreational guys getting it, everybody's after it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, poor little baits don't stand
a chance. They don't stand a chance between the fishermen and the fish.
Between the commercial fishermen, the recreational fishermen, and the fish, who are naturally supposed to eat it.
Yeah, I mean, they have no chance. like I said, I mean, most of the time, I'm just using the white bait for only snook. Everything else, you know, I'm throwing crabs, ladyfish, mullet, sardines, for my redfish. You know, my tarpon, I'm throwing thread fins and crabs, squirrel fish, shrimp. But whitebait seems to only be working really on the snook. It might have to do something with their spawning, because their spawning's almost coming up. I'm starting to see a lot of snook migrating towards the beaches. You know, and not in ones and twos. I'm talking about in, like, little schools of snook. There's a lot of big snook running your sandbars right now.
Now, I've been hearing more about that. Have you been out anywhere around the Barrier Islands mm-hmm. yet? How are the snook, are they increasing numbers
yes.
out there?
Yeah, there's a lot of snook starting to pile up out that way. A lot. You know, and the big ones, too. You know, the thing I've been using best on the big snook is a ladyfish cut in half. For some odd reason, that's what the bigger one's wanting right now.
You know, you can use a trout, spotted sea trout for bait as long as it's legal size mm-hmm. and whole condition and whatever. And we used to use some of the bigger sea trout for snook bait back then.
I got snook to double check. It.
What's that?
Snook and cobia, love them.
Oh yeah, everything loves them. We don't encourage people to do that.
No,
it's because it's a very good eating fish on its own, but. I don't know. The reality is, it's not that much better eating than whiting.
No, I mean, whiting are very good eating. I mean,
I see so many people that
they're good for bait,
too. Don't fillet them before they use them for bait.
Yeah.
I want the fillet.
Yeah, I mean, they're very good eating. They are good for bait, but they're good eating.
All right, well, let's get into this. If you were going to go out, where do you go out now? Where's some of the best places to look for big snook? We were just talking about outside the sandbars. Outside of, you know, west side, east side, no, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, Jug Creek.
I'm starting to see a lot more towards, like, the outside of, like, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, like, Devilfish, Sandfly, Boquilla around Part now, Island and all that.
Would you take a trolling motor and go look, or would you just anchor up and chunk some baits out there?
Most of the time I'll get on the trolling motor. You know, I'll sit really far back, and I'll look for them. And once I find that the area that they're in, because they're not really holding up in one area every single day, they're starting to migrate towards the beaches is what I'm seeing.
Right. Which is what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm looking for them. Once I start seeing where they're concentrated at, I'm most definitely not trying to spook them, so I'm staying very far back. And once I see them, then I anchor up. You know, I'll back up a little further than out of sight distance, and I'll start chunking bait out there. I just been freelining big cut ladyfish for the big snook.
Now, this time of year, this type of water conditions, I used to let a lot of 7.5, 8 foot rods in the boat so that I could make those big long distance casts. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, I always have 7.5 foot rods on my boat. Majority of all of them are. I do carry some 7 foot just for like the kids or ladies and stuff like that.
I got to show you, Shield came out with these solid carbon rods. And they're, you know, rods are hollow inside because they have a long, skinny steel shaft that they wrap the graphite on, or the glass or whatever it is they wrap on. And that's how they form the rod. Then they're sanded down, painted. But this is, I guess, a solid chunk of carbon, kind of like the old solid glass rods.
Wow.
And they're actually
tough.
Pretty crazy.
They gotta be pretty tough.
They're in
the
room right over there. I don't have them on the floor yet, but you know, I'm kind of anxious to try that. They say they're amazingly tough, more like glass rods, but they're made out of carbon.
Wow!
So I'm kind of curious to find out what that's like. We bought the Shield reels and rods, and
they sound pretty interesting.
It's interesting to me. It seems a little. People pick them up and go, wow, that's light. And I don't know. To me, they feel a little heavy. I don't know. I got to put them on a scale, because it's really weird how some rods, you hold it and it feels heavy, but when you put it on the scale, it doesn't weigh any more than a very light rod does. It's weird how things will feel.
See, I prefer, you know, a little heavier rod myself. That's just what, you know, is most comfortable for me in my hand.
Okay. Okay, I hit the pause button and we're back. And he's got that rod in his hand. Now, how does it feel to you?
To be honest with you, it feels pretty good. I like the way it feels. It does feel like you were talking about a little heavier.
A little tip heavy or something.
Yeah, front heavy.
Yeah, it feels a little front heavy because I think that solid carbon maybe has something to do with it. I guess I should have grabbed, like, you know, what rods are you using? The Akuma ones.
Akumas, yep.
I think the Akuma's more balanced feeling, a little lighter on the end.
Yeah, they're more equal. Like, this one's more front heavy, but once you put a reel on it, it's probably going to balance it out just perfect.
Yeah. Like I say, it was just different. I'm glad to see you felt the same thing I did, because I've handed them some guys, and they go, oh, wow, this is so light, this is nice. And I thought, man, my hand is a little off, but you're feeling the same thing I am.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's front heavy. It feels good, though. It really
does.
It's
different. Bring it back where you can just kind of bend that tip and feel that tip on it. It's really different. Huh. Isn't that a weird feel?
But see, I like that. I like stiffer, sturdier rods. I don't like I seem to get better action on the casts and everything else. You know, that's just me personally.
The rod's tighter and the end doesn't flop back and forth. When you go to cast and you throw the rod forward in the casting motion, if the tip of that rod is still moving back and forth, it's hitting the line, slowing it down. The quicker that rod comes back to still and straight, the farther your line goes.
Yep.
And
I think those sell pretty good. be honest with you, they feel very nice.
They did pretty good at $100. It's not a $200. I would have thought with the all this and everything else, they were going to be $200.
Yes.
And it's at $100. The reels are at $100. So I think they're going after some of Penn's market. Because the battalions are $100. The Star Stellar Light's $100.
I'm really impressed.
Right in with the... Because the rods you use from Akuma, $100 rods... Yep. They went right in that, okay, we're not going to make as much money, but we're going to hit that.
Well, every company has their $100 rod. You know, Penn, Star, everybody does. Akuma.
Yeah, but every company who's come out with a new rod in the last couple of years is 160, 200, 210.
Yeah.
They're all 140 up, 160. I was shocked when they hit all these right at the $100 mark. Well, that one's 95 or something, but I mean $100.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Enough.
You know, it's funny. I tell someone, it's about $100. Well, no, it's only 95. I'm like, okay. They live in a different world than I do. To me, 95 is as close to $100 bucks as I ever need.
Oh, yeah.
But.
No, it feels very good. Have you used one yet?
No, they're brand new. I mean, I just got them in. I haven't even got them on the rack yet. I got to. Next week, I am in construction mode. We've got like 300 new items to put up.
Uh-oh.
We've got a couple dozen brand new rods. We've got some new reels that we've got out. But I've got, the Dexter Russell. I've got the whole line of Dexter Russell.
I just seen the little one on the counter.
Yeah, we've got the new, all the American-made Dexter Russell knives, and they're priced great. I mean,
that's what I use. I use the Dexters.
But these are the upgrade to those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're even way better. I mean, they got much better steel in them. I've got those too. We're keeping the ones we've always had, but now we've got the higher end Dexters with the knives and the sheaths. I mean, so many new products.
They make a good product. I've been using them for a long time.
Well, they've been 140 years in business or something. Dexter Russell's been around forever. Barb, she's going on, she's on vacation, so she says, "Well, just do it. I'll deal with it when I get back." So, all right, back to the fishing. Right now, I think you can still catch some pretty decent fish in the canals. What are you thinking?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, there's still a lot of snook in the canals. There's a lot of black drum in the canals right now too. You're going to get an occasional redfish. The snapper bites actually been pretty decent in the canals. Been catching some nice size snapper in there.
Alright, up around the cutoff, things going pretty good?
You know, around the cutoff, doing a lot of snook fishing right now. You know, it's been really warm up there, so you know, a lot of our redfish aren't pushing up that far right now. But the snook fishing's amazing up there by the Mac cutoff. You know, and it's a little bit easier to fish up there because the water's got that natural dark tint to it. You know, so it makes it a little easier on yourself. I mean, I love fishing in my cutoff. You know, tippy canoe area, dark water, I like that.
Right.
You know, sometimes I do have to go out to the clearer water, which, you know, it's tougher fishing in that clearer water. Sometimes you got to downsize your leader. Sometimes you got to downsize your hooks. You got to make very long casts in that clear water. You know, but if I'm out looking for redfish right now, I'm out towards, like, Boca Grande area, Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, Pine Island. There's a lot of very good redfish out there. For some odd reason, we got a lot of oversized redfish in right now, too. You know, we've been catching a lot of fish in the mid-30s, upper 30 range, which is odd for this time of year.
Right.
I mean, they've been doing best on cut crab, cut mullet, cut pinfish. You know, the bite right now on the redfish isn't going to be like outrageous, you know, one after another after another. You'll catch one while you're anchored up on like a sandbar or something, wait like 5-10 minutes, you'll get another one. They are schooled up. Just be patient, you know, get your baits out there, soak them. You know, one thing I've been doing a lot lately is I've been bringing like a box of Spanish sardines with me. I've been dicing them up very, very fine because they're very oily. And what I've been doing is I've just been scattering the water with that to get everything to move in towards where I'm anchored up at, the area that I'm in. Once I get that water scattered with those Spanish sardines, then I'm throwing a crab or I'm throwing a head of a sardine or a cut mullet. Doing very good that way, especially on the redfish. I'm not chasing my redfish right now, though, just because the water's so clear. If you try to chase them, they're just going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing away from you. You know, it's better just to see where they know where they are, the area, and anchor up and be patient.
What?
I mean, that's what I've been doing best for the redfish right now.
Very cool.
You know, our tarpon fishing's been good. If you battle this wind.
Yeah. If I'm going to look for tarpon, I'm going to try and go down the east side and then try and get over towards the top of Jug Creek in somewhere in there.
Yeah. I mean, the two areas that I've been mainly tarpon fishing lately is either up Peace River or out on Boca Grande Beach, Cay Acosta. That's where I've been. You know, yesterday it was a nightmare out there on the beach yesterday. It was so rough. You couldn't see nothing, so you mainly relied on your side scan if you have a side scan on the boat.
Right.
You know, we seen one pot of fish roll yesterday all day.
Really?
Yep. I mean, that was it. I mean, we got on them. I stayed on them with the side scan. We ended up jumping one on a crab. He got off. And then it was slow the rest of the day until I seen one come up and roll, and we just took a blind cast and we hooked another one. But yesterday was tough. The day before, it was flat out there. The tarpon were right there by the lighthouse on the beach, and they were feeding. You know, they had a break from all this wind, and they were taking advantage of it. I mean, just this wind's really...
It's tough.
It makes it tough.
It slowed everything down in here, too, you know.
Oh, it did. I mean, you're like I said, right now, you could get in your backcountry, you could fish for your snook, your redfish, and you could be sheltered. You could find calm water. But right now, for the tarpon...
Did you want to... we're doing this next week. Did you want to do the Luigi's with us?
Yeah.
Now, what we're going to do this month at Luigi's, we've already... the 9th and 10th are both full, but we booked another night. It's the 23rd as well. So if you want to do all three nights with us, the subject of the fishing club meetings this month is tarpon fishing, how to, and then what we're going to do when it doesn't work. And I'm planning on some shark, Goliath grouper, or maybe how to have maybe a snook or redfish or something. But I was kind of thinking shark and Goliath grouper, because when you're going out tarpon fishing, you're trying to look for big fish.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe cobia, shark.
The sharks are going great right now.
I was thinking basically just doing, when it doesn't work with the tarpon, how to take your tarpon stuff and reset it for the shark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of the basis of this month's talk.
I mean, shark fishing's great right now. I mean, I've been doing a lot of shark fishing lately, and it's the big sharks are here. There's a lot of small ones, but the big ones are starting to move in. I mean, every day I'm going out shark fishing right now, we're catching at least one hammerhead.
Really?
Yep, at least one every time we go out. And, you know, 8 to 10 foot.
And they're amazing sharks.
It's the best, in my opinion, they're the best shark we have.
I think it's the most, it's like the godfather of sharks, because I've seen packs of 10, 20 bull sharks attacking and coming up, and one hammerhead that's maybe 2 feet bigger than the bull sharks.
Scares like them all away.
6, 8 foot bull sharks, and just like a pack of hyenas coming around, and then one hammerhead shows up, and the parting of the ways is just unbelievable. Yep. It's like, dad's here.
What was like,
everybody
the,
be good.
The other day we were out shark fishing, we caught a couple 4 or 5 footers, and we were getting hits very regularly, and then all of a sudden it just stopped. And I was like, okay. And, you know, I was almost to the point where we almost picked the anchor up and moved a little bit, but I was like, you know, usually when that happens, you know, a big one moved in.
Right.
Well, I was actually pulling in the chum bag, and I'm pulling the chum bag in, and here comes this 9 foot hammerhead, comes up to the surface, starts following chum bag, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I stopped. You know, we threw the baits out there, we waited, then we started catching a couple small sharks again. Well, it was all of a sudden it stopped again, and I was like, that big one probably came back around. Next thing you know, there goes the rock.
It's amazing how you've got all these sharks hitting and hitting and hitting, and then it just stops dead, and you're like, okay, watch the rods.
Yep.
Watch it, because something's about to happen. Because when you're getting a hit and a hit and a hit and a hit and a hit, and then everything just goes quiet, that means Mac Daddy showed up.
And it's big weird, bulls. Though. The hammerheads usually show themselves before they eat. I don't know why.
They seem to crisscross the surface.
Yes.
They're scanning the area for some reason or another. When I'm shark fishing, I've learned to shut off my depth finder.
Mm-hmm.
I leave my depth finder on while I got for the first 15, 20 minutes, and then I shut the depth finder off, because bull sharks will come to the noise of a depth finder. And once you get the dumber sharks up, but a hammerhead, when he hears a depth finder, doesn't like to bite.
Mm-mm.
He knows that depth finder means there's a problem.
Yep.
So I actually leave my depth finder on to track some of the dumber sharks up, because they're just coming up to eat, and they know that people catch fish and throw them back in the water. So they're looking for a free meal.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll bite the bait. But a hammerhead, if he hears a depth finder, he'll come up and look, but he won't bite usually. Yep. You got to kill that depth finder to get a hammerhead.
Or usually, you know, most of the time I do shut my depth finder off no matter where I'm fishing. Like yesterday, I couldn't, because it was so rough, I couldn't see the tarpon.
Right.
So I had to leave the side scan on. But most of the time, if I'm inshore fishing or wherever I am, my depth finder gets shut off once I start fishing.
People forget. It's going bing, 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 real high pitch and low pitch noises going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a difference in the fishing. It really does.
Yep. I mean, I learned that years ago. I mean, I seen it help me a lot better when I shut everything down. You know, especially on my boat, I have my regular live well pump, but I also have, like, an oxygen thing that I have in my boat.
Right.
A lot of times when I'm in shallow water, my live well pump gets shut off. It's less noise.
Yeah, it's surprising how much that whir of that motor, because it's a little electric motor spinning a propeller. And that little bit of cavitation and stuff, and what I've done with my live wells to minimize that, is I've got water coming up from the bottom of the live well. I drilled holes in the bottom of my live well and put them in there. And I just let the water boil up. And what happens is I don't have it narrowed down or pinched. It's just full blow with no pressure. High volume, low pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And the water comes in, and then the standpipes take the water out at the top. As I used to boil water in from the top, it didn't recirculate very well on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I had to, when it's warm out, put another pump in that pulls from the bottom of the tank and puts it back in at the top to splash more water.
Yep.
So when I did it, it works great in the cooler weather, but as soon as it starts getting hot, it won't provide enough oxygen, so yep. I have to splash the water at the top to create more air.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it helps, especially, you know, in these hot times of the month.
Yeah. It's just weird how it ended up working out. But what I like is I can throw a load of thread fins in there. You know how they usually fill the thing up with scales? I turn both pumps on. I have two that go into the bottom of it. And when I turn both of them on, there's so much water volume, it boils the scales up and out through the drains.
Yep.
Clears the water right out.
Yeah, because, I mean, those scales, they will clog your live well up. They will make your live well overflow.
Oh, yeah. And by boiling the water in from the bottom, which is high volume, low pressure, all of a sudden they float up and they're gone and the live well's clear.
Yep.
I just stir it up once or twice and I'm all good.
Because, yeah, like, those big thread fins, I won't throw a cast net on them. In my opinion, it damages them too much. They, you know, takes a lot of their scales off. They won't live very long. I always sabiki up my big thread fins.
Well, just so you know, you might be able to listen to Radio Fishing on Facebook very soon. The first one's loading. I did a kite fishing seminar, and we're going to try this one and a couple other ones.
Wow. That'll be really good.
One of the programs I've been playing with was how to put the video up there, how to turn the audio into video, because you can't put audio up there. You have to put video up. So I think this is going to work. I don't know. It's loading right now. It's about 3/4 loaded.
Yeah, another thing that's doing pretty good out there is all the mackerel. You know, a lot of mackerel running around.
Man, that's one of my favorite eating fish.
I mean, they're fun. You could just go out there and just throw a spoon, throw anything, and just sit there and catch mackerel after mackerel.
You know, for me and Terry, I keep 3 mackerel, 1.5 apiece. And by the time you add the coleslaw or potatoes or whatever it is, you got a nice meal out of
it. Oh, yeah.
Flay them up and then butter, a little lemon herb seasoning. Put that side down. Before you turn it, I put more butter on, a little more lemon herb seasoning. Brown on both sides, done. They're quick and they're wonderful. They're horrible if you freeze them.
Yeah, don't do that.
But if you catch them that day and cook them that night, and just run some good, and man, what a wonderful treat.
Another thing I've been noticing is, like, when we're over there sitting there catching all the mackerel, I'm taking a rod out, you know, a shark rod, and I'm putting a chunk of bait on, and I'm throwing it underneath all the mackerel.
Now, are you finding tarpon go to the mackerel as well, or is it just mostly shark?
Right now, I'm seeing a lot of sharks mixed in with the mackerel.
That's kind of been my... I haven't noticed that the tarpon follow the mackerel the way the sharks will.
Not as much. I mean, I have seen them, you know, follow them in the past, but this year I haven't. It's the sharks.
Schools of ladyfish, mullet, trout, the tarpon will be on those.
Yes.
But the mackerel, not so much, I don't see. Once in a while. But so many times I've caught ladyfish and have a tarpon eat it while I'm reeling it in.
Yeah.
Same thing with trout, but almost never with a mackerel.
Yeah, I've never had one come up and take a mackerel on me either.
So you're actually, without realizing it, seeing the same thing I am.
Because
mm-hmm. How many times have you been catching a ladyfish and had a tarpon and engulf it while you're reeling it in?
Yeah, usually not very good, because usually you're catching your ladyfish on a small rod.
Yeah, but it still happens.
Oh, yeah.
And you're sitting there going, dang, oh, and all the lines going away, and you're hoping
you can't
that when
do
it
nothing.
Breaks off, that it's somewhere further out, you know.
Yep. But, yeah, so you don't lose all your line, because
yeah,
you will.
Yeah, your line's all gone, so.
Put that rod up for the rest of the day.
But that's weird how that works, though. I don't remember ever having a tarpon take a mackerel. Now, sharks I've had hit my mackerel coming in, but not the tarpon. And you would think they would eat those mackerel. I don't.
You would think, but maybe it's not one of their favorite foods.
Yeah, because, I mean,
I mean, they could be picky. picky.
You know, I was just sitting there, and, you know, this has been kind of a random thought show, so that was just one random thought that hit my head.
Yeah, because, I mean, you'd look at them, and they love squirrel fish. Squirrel fish is known for a grouper bait. Oh,
I would love to be able to get live squirrel fish to sell. I could sell a ton of those for tarpon
yes.
bait.
They work amazing for tarpon.
Can you imagine if you were up here in the harbor, put one about 10 feet below a bobber?
Oof.
Oh, man.
It's going to go.
It's going to go. Oh, I got a new tarpon lure here. Guy hand makes these.
Look at that.
They're brand new tarpon lure. And they're handmade. They're about $25.
Wow.
Back your drag off quarter turn, because it's not wired through. It's a wood lure, handmade wooden lure. But it kind of goes along with an older pattern from years ago.
Yeah.
And
bet you the big snook would eat this too.
Yeah, I bet you.
That's pretty interesting. I like that. I like how they have the single hook on the back.
Well, he made them with two treble hooks, and I said, I don't want them. I gave him the hooks to put on that. That's that VMC single hook replacement. And it's got about an inch and a quarter screw in it holding it to that wood. So that's what I'm saying. You're going to have to stay 10 pounds of drag.
Yep.
And believe it or not, folks, it doesn't sound like a lot, but that's really more than enough to fight it with. You know, you're gonna have a little extra time with it, but... you know, take a little longer to revive it. But I'm going to flatten the barbs on this front treble hook. And this lure is kind of like an old musky lure is what it reminds me of. Because it's got the flat head that works as a planer diver at the top of the head instead of having the bill on it. But it's carved out of one piece of wood. It's beautiful. It's a Bob Burris lure. And I used to sell Burris lures years ago. I'm a little worried about the space on this
back hook.
Treble hook. Huh. I think if I was going to put this together, I might put a ball bearing swivel in front of it.
But yeah, that'd probably help a lot.
3-4 feet in front of it, just put a little ball bearing swivel there just to give it a little extra rotation on the line.
I guarantee that tarpon will eat that. The snook will. I don't see why cobia wouldn't eat it either.
Just be able to troll this for tarpon and actually hook tarpon trolling.
Well, see, I do a lot of trolling for my cobia. Yeah, I guarantee that'd probably work for them cobia.
I don't. I think most things are going to eat it.
But yeah, it looks very good, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he showed them to me, and I said, okay, here's the hook. I got some more coming. I got just a few colors in here. I got a you know what's probably going to be the best one is the old clown. Whoop. Yeah, knocking stuff over. Here's the red and white, but I think the clown is going to be the one that takes it the most. The yellow with the red and black dots. I think that one's going to be the best. It's always the dumbest looking color that
it's like, I don't know why it is, but the weirdest one always works.
But that was one of my favorite color patterns when I lived up in the far north, you know.
I think those will work pretty good.
And I think that's going to be, but I'm going to take those out and do a little trolling with them up on the river.
There's a bunch right there by your place.
I'm going to see if the tarpon will hit those. That was one of the things.
I got a buddy that's been going up there every afternoon catching them tarpon right by your house.
And I think I can troll that right up the river and just whack the tarpon with them. But I'm going to pull that green and white and then the clown color first and see how they do.
You're going to go hook into a monster snook with that. That's what's going
to
happen.
I'm not going to be trolling that close to shore.
Don't troll around the docks.
What do you think? I'm thinking about 4 to 6 foot is what that's going to pull.
Probably about 4 foot, 5 foot, yeah, right around there.
Four. It's a lot of flotation in it, but I'm thinking it's going to pull down pretty good. So we'll see what happens.
Be interested to know what that does on the kingfish, too.
Man, I'm worried about wooden lure on kingfish, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it'd probably work pretty good on them.
As long as it lasts until they chewed holes all through it. But sometimes that makes them even better.
More action.
One of my favorite king mackerel lures is a chunk of wood. It's that old cedar plug.
Yes.
With no paint on it. Just the cedar plug, a lead head with a piece of wood.
Oh, yeah.
And I rock them with that.
I use them cedar plugs a lot when I go offshore.
Yeah, I do too.
I put an inline sinker in front of it and drop it down.
They're amazing.
Yep.
So, anyway, any thoughts?
You know, watch the wind and get out there and, you know, try to plan your day with where the wind's going to be sheltered. You know, it's going to make it a lot easier for yourself. You're not going to try to fight the wind and everything all day long. You know, just slow down right now, too, especially on the redfish, you know. Speed up everything on the snook, but slow down for your redfish. This time of year, like normally I do speed up for my redfish, but I tried that and it wasn't working at all. You know,
I'm 100% in agreement with you. If I was going to go out and not having talked to you, I would be going redfish much quicker because the water temperature's good. The oxygen levels are good. Everything's good. They should be moving fast. And you and two other guys that I know that are like you, that really, really catch a lot of fish. I mean, you're one of the captains who just really rocks the fish. You're very, very good. They're all saying slow. Yep. You and these two other ones. I mean, Everybody else isn't mentioning it.
It was like 3 or 4 days ago, I was sitting on a school of redfish. And I was just out there, you know, goofing off that day. I got done early, so I came back out just to play for a little bit. And I was throwing a gold spoon because I used up all my bait on the charter. So I was just throwing a gold spoon. And I was reeling it in fast, you know, like you would think you would. And I'm just watching these redfish not even pay attention to it. Well, then I threw the gold spoon out there, a weedless one, and I just started bouncing it off the bottom like a jig. And then I started hooking them, and I'm like, this doesn't make sense, but okay. So then I tried to throw it again fast, nothing. Try to throw it again fast, nothing. Well, then I slowed it down and was just bouncing it out of the grass, and I started hooking them. So just stay slow for your redfish right now. Speed everything up for your snook. Early morning, throw a topwater bait. I mean, topwater right when the sun's coming up is working phenomenal. But other than that, you know, if you want to try to catch some of them big snook, you know, go get yourself some ladyfish. They've been kind of hard to find lately just because there's tarpon starting to show up, and whenever the tarpon starts showing up, the ladyfish go missing. I don't know where them suckers go, but they go somewhere and they hide.
Well, I gotta tell you, if I was a 1 to say 4 pound ladyfish and I had 150 pound behemoth yeah. coming after me, I'd probably figure out a place to hide.
Too. Oh, yeah. I mean, this time of year, I mean, I love throwing them ladyfish for the big snook. You know, because your big snook, they're all starting to feed very heavy for the spawn that they're getting ready to do. So they're trying to build up all their fat and protein and everything.
All right. No, I just heard my phone go off, but I have no idea where it is. You know, people say, you didn't answer your phone. I said, because I don't know where it is.
It's around here somewhere.
I'll get to it. But, so slow down for the redfish, speed up for the snook, and just hope you can do something magical to get entice that tarpon at this point.
On the tarpon, throw squirrelfish, big shrimp, crabs, you know, thread fins too. You know, but for your sharks, I've been doing the best on ladyfish.
Yeah.
Ladyfish and bonita. For some odd reason, I couldn't catch a shark on a mullet the other day. It was all ladyfish and all bonita.
And what's weird is 2 weeks ago was all about mullet.
Yes, it was.
If you weren't throwing mullet, you just weren't catching a tarpon. You weren't catching a shark. Nothing was going to eat it. You threw ladyfish, anything out there, nothing wanted it. They wanted mullet.
Yep. I mean, when I go shark fishing.
Less than 2 weeks later. Bada bing.
Yep. When I go shark fishing, I always bring multiple types of bait. Because, like, they're just like us. Like, I ate pork chops last night. You know, tonight I might eat either chicken or steak. You know, I don't want
Absolutely.
I don't want the
I
same
pork
thing.
Chops last night. Ooh, this is weird. And you were calling me, like,
But, you know, always bring really multiple tiles of bait. Night, so. No matter what you're going for, you know. If you're going for redfish, bring pinfish, crabs, mullet, ladyfish. If you're going for sharks, you know, bring multiple styles of baits. You know, they don't want the same thing every single day.
Yeah, and I'm in agreement with them. And it's kind of funny because people always say, why am I catching this? You know, what kind of bait can I get so they won't eat that? I said, well, you look like your German ancestry, right? And they're like, well, yeah, and I'm... Well, you know, just put out spaghetti in front of you and you won't eat it because Germans don't eat Italian food.
Yeah.
You know, and people forget that food is food. But, like, you get cravings for some stuff. Mm-hmm. I've actually stood in front of the refrigerator knowing that I want something and trying to figure out what it is.
It's not there, yeah.
You know, maybe it's there, maybe it's not. Or, like, oh, man, I really want a bowl of cereal. And you got burgers, you got this, you got that, but boy, you really want that.
Yep.
I think fish must go through the same thing.
I mean, they have to. I mean, I look at them as they're the same as people. You know, we don't want the same exact thing every single day to eat.
Well, and it could be even a vitamin craving or a mineral craving or something that, you know, their body tells them they need, a certain type of oil or proteins or something like
Especially
that.
Especially for, you know, when fish start spawning, you know, they have to build up all their fat and everything.
Yeah.
And so that might really trigger them to start eating other things.
And it could be why some points you want crab, some points you want fish, some point you want live, some point you want dead. I mean, who knows, but...
I mean, shrimp's on the bottom food chain for everything. Everything eats a shrimp.
At one point or another, everything eats shrimp.
Yeah.
So, well, I guess I don't know what else we need to talk about. It's Captain Carl. Carl, what's your phone number?
941-565-7325.
All right. And Carl is available to go out on charter fishing trips, and he'll take you out fishing. And call him up and ask him what the hot bite is. Because the hot bite changes, and if you've got weather, and you know, a lot of guys can't get out. I will say, it can be blowing 25. Carl, find a place to fish.
Yeah, there's always somewhere to hide out there.
There's always somewhere to hide. I used to do real well with that because I'd be in the store and somebody coming, oh, my charter just canceled. We only got today. We got to go. And I'd say,
let's go.
Well, you like doing whatever? And they're like, sure, okay. Put the boat in and go. Yeah. Like you say, there's always a place to hide. Some days, as long as there's no lightning.
Yeah, I don't do lightning.
Once the lightning hits, all bets are off. Sorry, we're going home.
Yep.
I don't mind fishing in the wind. I don't mind fishing in the rain. But I don't fish in lightning.
Nope. Especially on my boat. Mine's a lightning rod.
Yeah, well, you've seen the polling tower on mine?
Yes.
Can you imagine? I used to have a regular tower and the polling tower.
Oh.
Can you imagine what a how scared you are running that boat once the lightning
starts?
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, you couldn't have drove a stick pin up my butt with a sledgehammer coming back one day. Light is cracking all around. I mean, the biggest piece of metal you ever saw.
Yeah, I don't do lightning. We're going back to the dock at that point. Either that or we're pulling into like a restaurant in the water. We're going in to hide.
Somewhere to hide.
Yep.
I like going to marinas that have a lot of tall boats.
Yes, big boats.
Sailboats are great. I really like docking up next to sailboats.
Yeah, that's very smart.
Well, out on Gasparilla Island, guy has an 84-footer, and it hit one of his outriggers and on the boat. And the way they figured, they've traced it back to the majority of the damage and stuff. It did $4 million worth of damage to that boat.
Wow.
$4 million. Oh, my God.
You know, another thing is, if you guys are doing any night fishing out towards Placida, be careful running out of Little Gasparilla. There is a sunken sailboat.
Where is that at?
Right outside Little Gasparilla.
Out on the flat, in the Gulf?
On the Gulf. I mean, you could see it. During the daytime, you're going to see it. That's why I said at nighttime, be careful. Because the mast is sticking out of the water. The top of the deck is sticking out of the water. But it is... pretty good sized sailboat right at the mouth of Little Gasparilla Pass. I mean, I wouldn't want to hit that. You might be sunk right next to him if you did.
You know what happened. He was looking
at shoal.
He was looking at his chart, saw the pass, and the pass says 25 feet. Well, he didn't realize sailboaters, for some reason or another, can't be bothered to put a depth finder on the front of the sailboat. What good does it do to have it on the back of a sailboat?
No
good at all. If you have a sailboat and you're going slow anyway, it'll read.
Yeah.
Run a wire up to the front and put one off the front, but at least have one in the back.
Exactly.
And 99% of the sailboats don't have a depth finder on them. And they get a big keel. And he went to go through that pass and ground it hard in the shore on there. And by the time he got out there, the waves had already buried it. Because that keel, he'll start laid over. And then that keel gets sucked down into the sand, and then the boat sinks in. You'll be able to watch that mast go all the way down underwater.
Oh, it's sticking straight up.
Yeah, but I've seen four of them since I've been here that hard aground in shallow water like that, and they start laid over on their side, then they turn straight up, and then eventually they sink straight down out of sight. I'm
trying to find the picture of it.
So... anyway, you'll have to email that picture to me.
Yeah.
And we'll put it up with this.
Yeah, I mean, during the day, you could see it clear as day. It's sticking straight up out of the water. But at nighttime, you wouldn't see it. You wouldn't have a clue it's there. I mean, I wouldn't want to hit that thing.
Okay. So, anyway, so mariners, beware. If you're going out of Gasparilla Pass, on the outside, on the Gulf side, there is a sailboat stuck in the mud.
It's stuck right on that shoal that's right outside of the Little Gasparilla.
And it's just buried up. And it'll just get worse. So, anyway, I guess that'll about do it for today, huh?
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay. Well, this is Fish and Frank, Captain Carl, and we're just going to name this show Whatever Hits Your Head. So, I guess we will catch you on the next Radio Fishing. Thanks for... oh, wow. Yeah, that sucker. We're going to have to... I'll post that up. I'll put that on the Radio Fishing page. Is that... where is that on your phone?
Yeah.
Yeah. You email that to me. We'll get that picture up so you guys can see it. It's funny. All right. It's not funny if you own the boat. It's only funny if it's not yours.
Yeah.
If it's yours, you're crying in your beer because that's like... that's a very expensive
boat. Yeah, very expensive.
It's a very expensive boat. It's really sad, really funny all at the same time. Anyway, thanks for listening, boys and girls. We'll catch you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.